question number 16708, Bill Nolan, Reel 3.
Mr. Nolan, Reel 3, we'd just come to the point where the 2nd Battalion DLI had gone to Thana for some jungle. This was for some jungle training. Could you tell us a bit about that?
We're doing a little bit of jungle training, and one thing about this Thana I'll never forget is this big iron pipeline. Big iron pipeline, you know, you're talking about 3 or 4 foot diameter, you know, which makes it a big pipe above the ground. And us, we used to walk along the top of that. And he used to the pipe. And every thing coming up back there, you know, you're walking along there, and you're walking on, and then you get walking on back again, you know, doing different like that. But then again, we're moving fast again. We just have to do this, build a jungle train, going through the jungle, watching this thing, you know, somebody's telling you, don't forget to look up the trees and around the bushes, be careful where you walk, and don't keep up the paths if there's any pathways and different things like that. You've got to try and get this hole and little nuts. But then, shortly after that was only a couple of weeks. Now, then, we transferred again to this Juhu Beach, which was just north of Bombay, which was a lovely beach, full of palm trees and what have you, and nice surroundings. Nice houses, there were a few nice houses at the top. They had a few bars along the beach. And we started doing amphibious training again. And we were on ships, baby ships, Liverpool boats. One was called Zilwara, and the other one was called Zonera. And they were our ships that we were going to do the training on. Now, before we ever get onto the ships, what was happening was, the company I was in, and I think this happened to the company I was in, everybody had to swim. See? Well, at the time, I couldn't swim very well even then. So what they done was, they'd take you out in the boat, drop you over the side, and they had you like a Mae West, you didn't have a Mae West on it. And he had to swim between two petrol tins, or two boys. And then, when you've done that, met the beach, you got marked for that. Then you started doing this so often, slowly building you up. Then in the end, you are swimming from them markers. With all your kit on. You know, you used to put stones in your pouches to make it look like you had Ben Kelly things, or you had your pouches on, your boots on, everything like that. And that was to make sure that everybody was able to swim for there. And then you had to start getting used to scramble nets look easy. When you got full kit on, makes it out of all if we're going over the side of the ship, because the side of the ship's going that way and you're going, you're trying to go the other way. Anyhow, that's what you're doing all the time, and getting into the boats and landing on beaches, and you have like a mock landing, you know, landing on one of the shores down there, LCAs, and then they tell you, you know, make sure it's in, as you jump up, you drop down about 6 feet, you know, and if you can't swim, you can't get out, you know, you've got it. Kids on different things like that. And then shortly after that, when all that training was done there, see, you don't know how many weeks, everything's moving all the time, you're doing one thing and then all of a sudden you're packing kids again, and you might go back to Amanaga, then from Amanaga you go to Chittagong, and this is all started, this is where we are now we're up in Chittagong. We're outside of Burma. And the next thing that happens there is you're doing the same
that,
thing.
That was round about Christmas time.
Yeah.
1942.
Yeah. Yeah. Was Christmas time, just before Christmas time, because all we got was 10 cigarettes between us on the train. That was between us time there. And then when you get there, doing the same training, and the first thing that happened was, they say, right, this is military again. This must be me, it must be anti-military, mate. Anyhow, what happened then? You got these rubber boots, like a sand suit, you know, soft top. You know the only plimsoll you get for doing PT in? But like that, but they're a boot. You come up to your ankles, see? They ask you your size, you say size 7. So you put the size 7 in. Well, they tell you then that when you land anywhere, for the first time, because you have your boots to change them, for the first time, all you want you to do is get about six mile landing, 6 mile inland, you see. So therefore, you only got to march 6 miles, according to them. See? So that's what we're doing, we're marching in these boots. And then what happened? We're all walking like cowboys, aren't we? All our feet's on one side, like the ankles move, like that. On one side, for the simple reason is, your feet swell up. And they hadn't allowed for that. So I said a size 7. So you got a size 7. So they had to alter them all, give you a bigger size. So that when you're marching, it's allowed for that. And then you get these, you get all the talk then about this island called Akyab.
What was being said?
This island's supposed to be like the Japanese headquarters. It's a main place. It's an island. And they're concentrating on taking that island. So therefore you're getting photographs telling you about the island. See? Where certain things are, and you can only see little spots. They say that's that man, that's mangrove or something like that. Then you had a chap who's only British, don't know what he was, don't know who he was, but he'd been in Japan. He started giving lectures, and he started saying, "There's a Japanese are all bandy legged." See. That's what getting carried on the mother's back. See? And then they're all short sighted. They all wear glasses. So, everything was contradictory to what we actually come across later on in the war. And they're all saying entirely false. So we were going on this island, and they kept saying to go on the island. They went on paddle steamers. You went on there, anything at all. You had boats there, steel boats, with 8 or 9 sticks, or 10 sticks down the centre of the boat. And you used to pull them, jerk them forwards and backwards, and that would turn the rudder. You know, and so that was a row and a big hole with them. You get them going. But then, what happened then was, it seems that all the ships that Mountbatten and Nutland come out there then, it seems that all the ships that Mountbatten wasn't, it was more important for them to be in the Mediterranean area. So therefore he's short. And this British 2nd Division, which is to boost the morale of everybody, you're not forgotten, we're sending divisions out to help you, that was the idea, and they built a second. That's why people were jealous of the British 2nd Division. That was only propaganda, that. We were no different to any other division. There was much of a bit more equipment than them. But then it was so on like that. And the next thing that happened to that, they decided then to go in by land. Well, after a lot of doing, logging in, you get the same thing again. Wavell was there and somebody else was there telling you, British division, against the Japanese. So he sent up a Instead, you'd always have three battalions in a brigade. Well, instead of that, this is made up of four battalions, consisting of the DLI, 2nd Battalion, Royal Berks, 1st and 2nd Battalion, Royal Welsh, 1st Battalion, and I think it was the 1st Royal Scots. Which way it was the 1st and 2nd Battalion, we were actually regular battalions. But most of these battalions have been made up by conscripts. Because the division had been in France, and they'd only be reformed after that. So we'll all have been like, it might have been one or two that might have been in France, you know what I mean? But they're not a great loss. They're mainly all green as far as war is concerned. And then they're telling you, and we march up by night in a bicycle on this like sand track, muddy track, big road up there, don't you find? And then you march so far, and then you went in a bastion and started climbing up, and you march again, and you slowly get nearer to when you can hear the guns.
This is when you were moving up to Mangdor, is it?
Yeah, I go to Mangdor, and then after Mangdor, my advances was a place called Dombike. That's Dombaik, I think. And it goes up to there, and what happened there, you're taking over these trenches. As a matter of fact, it was a good trench we took over. So then, you know, we had a place cut out, the Indians done it. They must have been there, and they got relieved. Next night he said, don't fire a shot. Don't do anything until you see the whites of the eyes. I like that.
They really said that, did they?
Oh, aye, the point is this. These chaps could go round the back of us, you wouldn't know where they were. They knew jungles and everything inside out, map green and everything like that. And then you're there for months like that. And you go out on patrol.
So you moved up on there on the 2nd of March, according to the book.
Yeah, round about that time.
43 we are now.
43.
And could you describe and you were in front of the Japanese positions in a series of watercourses or crooks or whatever.
Chungs and things like that. They were better fellows, and then, you know, the guys up doing patrols.
What was tell me about a patrol, a typical patrol. Well, how would you prepare for it?
Well, an officer said, I'd say, all right, take so many men, like, you know, take so many men on a patrol, and you've got an object to go to, and you want to find out. And sometimes an officer would turn around and say, look, there's nobody there. I want you to go on that hill and overlook, see what's further afield, see if there's anything there further afield, sort of thing. But now and again, you go to this particular point and half of them got wiped out because there was somebody on that hill. And this does happen. Mistakes were made, that does happen. You got to the hill, there's somebody there.
So sometimes the briefing was wrong. What weapons would you take with you?
Well, at the time, we only had the ordinary Lee Enfield rifle. It might take a couple of grenades, but not on the Enfield rifle. You always had your rounds and ammunition.
You obviously wouldn't take your 2-inch mortar.
No. And then.
Would you disguise your uniform or face in any way? I mean, would you?
No. And the next thing you do, they had a few Tommy guns then. Thompson submachine guns.
Had you any practice with them?
No. They were given to the NCOs. And sometimes they didn't fire. In fact, you mightn't even take the Bren gun with you. You know, at times, all the pen was. And
how many would go on a patrol?
The small one, you'd have seven. You know, just a section, see. Then another time, you might send a platoon. You know, which did happen one time. It was a hut there. You know, you could see it miles away, like, you could see a hut. I reckon that was a radio station. I reckon there was some communications there, you know. And you don't realise what happened there. We had an officer there and he just come out. And he, like everybody else, I said, well, all the time I was there, I never seen many Japs. You think there's millions of them there, but I never seen many. And this what happened, this officer come out, he said, don't see many Japs here. Said, no, you won't. And this particular time, and along come Sandhurst, who was there, nice officer, he was. So what happened to him, but what happened then was, he took his hair and he said, we're going to this one. There, you've got some crushed chunks and bits of bamboo, they crack like anything, you know. And then, when we got to this place, he said, right down, he said, number one section, you know, like, he'd be military minded, like, number one section fire, number two section, number three. And before we got a chance, we raided this place, but what was a big wooden fence around us. We couldn't get to the fence, big planks, you know, big wooden fence, nobody could get through anything like that. And next minute, two tracer bullets come up, and the Japanese had a habit of firing tracer bullets and really crushed one another. They put more of fire down. Anyhow, this officer said, withdraw. You see, and when you withdraw, they're on the beach, they're on the coast, on the coastline. Go along there and withdraw. Go along there, and as soon as you see them traces come over, you have to go like that, like statues, still, you know. Anyway, you just stay still. You know, couldn't see anything. But I was saying to him, anyhow, there was no bonfire, but he had to go to us and bring two nations out. And this is what it was. There were only nations, like, but brought them out for question. Two nations brought them out for question. And different things went on like that, but above my intelligence, you don't know how to work it out. But then, what happened after that? We've been there that time.
What about on a small patrol? Can you give an example of what you do on a small patrol?
Well, you're just going around, you're just going down the chungs.
See, what formation would you use?
Single file nearly all the time. Single file nearly all the time. To find out how far you can go before you see anything, before anything fires at you, anything like that. But then,
what was the jungle like around there in the Arakan? And what sort of...
The Arakan is the kind of place where there's one part on the flat, but a part, it's all hills, you're climbing up and down and slithering down all the time, you know. And you know, just as long as get mules up as well as to get your kits up and everything like that, you know. It's a place very hard to explain it. And then the water's there, like, I'll tell you once I'm there, in one place, in the same area, the Arakan, you call it. I went out and said, to get some water. That was, said, it was trickling through. Well, all it was only a trickle, you know, trickle coming through the chung, because you get dry season, there's no water. Yeah, go there, you put your bottle down, see, fill it up water. We had tablets, see, purifying tablets, see, two little boxes, or two little bottles. One was white, and one was blue. Put the white one in, purifies it. It's chlorine, more or less. And the other ones, you taste the taste of it. You put them in there, and I think it was Gossam. I move about that much, I can't remember all the names. Even here I was moving about. And the next thing happened was, Philip, I said, you know what? You know what's out there? What do you mean? I said, you know what's out there where we're getting the wars from? He said, well, I said, it's dead bodies lying across it. No, I said, dead bodies lying. Oh, he said, that's all right, put two tablets in. And he's wearing, and then the next thing that was.
What about, I mean, was there much animal life, you know, insects?
Never seen, well, you'd imagination like, but I never seen.
Or snakes, or anything.
Scorpion, but you might come across one now and again, like, you know, a scorpion and a snake and anything like that. But you only just see them with a flash or something like that. It's not fully all animal life, because the fire and everything, they all, you know, they all scatter all over. Another thing that was, most of us get malaria.
How long did that take? Was it quite early?
Yeah, and this, I got up there. But I never come out. Some people had to come out. Well, what was happening? I'll just tell you this one. This is very interesting. What happened there was, you get this malaria, you see. Well, I go to the doctor, and he gives me these medicines. Apples, doesn't he say? See? So, I take them. Oh, man, take them. Next day, I've still got temperature, still got temperature going on there. But I'm taking these medicines. So many, as he gives them to me, I'm taking them. See? Well, as I say, I never come out. I was in the Arakan from start to finish. Never come out. Never had malaria. Well, good to them. I was all right, you know what I mean? I'm taking these tablets. But then, after that, what happened after that was, after a certain bit, after all this patrol and all like that, decided now they're going to make a full frontal attack. See? So then you get all the divisional guns opening up. And the idea of opening up is just firing at them, see? But you'd never move them because the old tanks that we left behind, they were inside them. And a lot of trenches they do, you'd have to have big shells. You know, you want to bomb to ship most of them the way they do, these bunkers. And the next thing then, A company was here, B company, C company, D company. They were going through. As they're going through, where I was, we're thinking, move it back. Whoa, 1, 2, 3, we're coming back. See? And I wasn't far from them. When I heard Colonel, I heard him say, it's enough. Stop. Oh. Well, in the meantime, the Japs are now behind us again. And it wiped out nearly part of brigade headquarters. So they've been coming up, down the back, miles down the back, coming. And they had sword fights and different things going on like that. We were very naive in a lot of ways of anything like that.
What actually happened to you during that attack? What were you doing during the attack?
Well, we would have been the next company in. See? But the colonel stopped it. What happened then was, He got the old lot because the Welsh had lost 3 or 4 of the men. We'd lost so many men. Each regiment.
That's the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, yeah, led the attack. This is on the 18th, isn't
it? They went in, and then what happened then is we marched out then into the sea along the beach of the Arakan. I think that was to get out of the range of the guns and the hills. But anyhow, we walked in, I was get out of there. And we went to the walls and go along there on the beach, walked up, and we come in to a place called Indin, I think. Yeah, it would be Indin. Where the Japs had started digging in there, and one of them laid a smoke screen down. I don't know if it was the Japs or the Royal Welsh, but anyhow, the Japs come through the smoke screen and they killed a few there. But anyhow, well, it was from then onwards. You were fighting your way out. Because the next thing that happened was, I was carrying 2 cases of mortar bombs. And I see we cut off like this, and he said, get up there. I said, yeah, I'm not going up there with the mortar bombs like this, carrying these mortar bombs. You can't fight, not firing, you know. Said, well, you go up there. You want to be able to defend yourself when you get to the top. And another thing used to happen, coming back to offices, another thing, I won't mention names here, I don't think it's right. You get this attitude is, go ahead, go on, up there, go on, up there. I said to one, no, I'll tell them when to go. You go and look after them. Right? And these are different things what used to happen, different things. And then eventually, we finally got out. After all that, we finally got out. When we finished up, going back, cow cut away. Went over to Bramah Future. Back to Amanaga. See? Now, that was only part of the second day that had been in action. Then you come back to the Merrills. Because you passed over to Bramah Future and you hadn't done your 6 months, you don't get a medal. These are military, you know, this is where it all. Yet you could get a medal if you were in Calcutta. Because it's an operational area. You don't need to be in Burma or anything like that. Burma Star 1939. There's a 1939-43 star. And the others are 35. There's things like that that I didn't like about military.
So your mortar, did you actually have to open fire with your mortar during that campaign, or were you just basically lugging it about?
Just lugging it about. Well, you can you? These trees there, isn't it? And the other point is this, is when you come across these fellas that were bandy, these fellas were 6 foot tall. These were Imperial Guards, and they could run like rabbits. These weren't little fellas. And they were all snipers. Everywhere you went with snipers. Even the Coima was all full of snipers. Anywhere you went, full of snipers. And they could move around silence at night time. They've been at war for ages, haven't they? They've come through China and different places like that. But the point is this, is they're there, willing to die. We are, in a sense. But we are more on the defensive. They couldn't care less. They couldn't care less. But we're not like that. Well, I mean, we get people. We have a go. You're more or less forced in to do these things. You're more or less forced in. It proved all he needed out there was a couple of bombers. You could have bombed them up. Could have bombed them up. That's all you needed was a couple of bombers.
You could have bombed the Japanese positions out.
Oh, yeah. We've only got these points, but the biggest gun we had out there, 5.55. You can't get it through. I don't know much about the artillery, but yeah. You can't get into the jungles without getting up after them. Most of these 25-pounders, even the Japanese, the only way to the air is actually come in the trench. You only get to have about that much covering on the top of your trench and you just bounce up. You hear something on the trench, you just go, bang, that's it. Where they just run up in droves. They come at you. It's a bit advanced here, but when they come at you, they just come at you and they just come.
But that happened late, that's Kohima more, isn't it? Yeah. So at the time you hadn't seen many Japanese in the sort of Don Bake Arakan thing. You didn't see many Japanese.
No, not really. You see the flash here and there. I went down. I was sitting up. A man got shot in the arm. I didn't think his name was. He got shot in the arm. And I was sitting him down. And Billy McAvoy was with me. Out the corner of my eye, I seen this thing about Mac. Reynold got there, so there he is there. That was a sniper, the Japanese sniper. Oh, he's running towards one of the Royals' positions. He's running that way, and I'm shouting. I had no chance to get me right, you know, carrying a blow, and I've got the rifle there, it's jam. And the message shot me in the back, sort of thing, but that wouldn't have made no difference. That was one. I've seen about three altogether now. And another time, this officer was telling about this fella. We're on top of this hill. I say, you know, we're fighting our way out, sort of thing, you know. On top of this hill, and I didn't know what to do there. I said to him, do you know what? Look down there. He said he's never seen any Japs. There's a full column of Japanese with the flag flying. Marching through. Nobody's seen him. And obviously he said, well, sure he can throw grenades down there. Oh, he said, go up before this is down. All like that. Can't do anything. Oh, I said, and I said, well, they're going there. We're going to be stuck here. They'll be around us. We'll never get out. And that's what we are. That's what we kept saying, fellas, well, we'll never get out of this. Never get out. And that's what a lot thought at the time. We'll never get out. We did eventually get them. And that's what happened. But as far as these saying these can't, you know, they've all got glasses on. They might have glasses on, but they can still. Because their rifles are only as smaller than ours.